number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
So this weekend, it is the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. It is the NHL All-Star Game in Nashville. I got to be honest with you. I'm not really going to be watching either one of these things. I would love to admit that I would watch the NHL All-Star Game because it's in my city and it's in my town and people are really jacked up for it. But who am I kidding? I'm just not going to. And the Pro Bowl, I just stopped watching the Pro Bowl when I became, an adult with a brain.
I don't even remember the last time I watched the Pro Bowl.
I don't either. I remember I watched the Pro Bowl when I was a kid. When I was a kid, I loved it because there were circumstances involved for me watching the Pro Bowl. One, I thought it was cool. Two, I didn't have cable, so it was the only thing on. Three, I just couldn't let go of football. So if there was a football game on, I wanted to watch it. My dad never watched the Pro Bowl, and I never understood why. My dad would watch the Super Bowl, and then the Pro Bowl be on, I'd be the only one watching it. My dad never watched the Pro Bowl. And I think he knew what I ended up finding out as an adult, which is, this is kind of a waste. But people do watch it. People like watching the Pro Bowl for whatever reason. Here's the thing. When you get too quirky with your All-Star game, it's time to reevaluate the All-Star game. Like, when you get, here was my problem. I don't mind the team Jerry Rice, team Michael Irvin, and we're picking teams and all that stuff. But let's be honest. Why couldn't AFC, NFC just work? Why wouldn't you just do it that way and not tinker with this thing? Because in the end, here's the thing with the Pro Bowl. I think the Pro Bowl in a lot of All-Star games are subject to this simple rule in sports television. There is a percentage of the population that will watch sports no matter what. So let's say you have the NCAA Final Four. Okay, there is a portion of the country that will never watch it. There is a portion of the country that will always watch it. There is a portion that middle ground is the group you're trying to get at. It's like what Sparky Anderson used to say about baseball. You win 60, you lose. What is it? You win 54, you lose 54. It's what you do in the other 54 that count. The same way here. There's always a populate segment that's never going to watch it. There's always going to be a segment that does. So what are you trying to do with the middle? The group that may watch it or not watch it. Did that group ever demand that you change the format to this, let's pick teams and play a sandlot football game in Hawaii? Did they ever ask for something like that? Same with the NHL. Did that group in the middle, did they want a 3-on-3 game or USA versus the world or anything like that? I don't know. Maybe they did. I don't know. But I do know in football, I have never once sat around with my friends going, you know what make the Pro Bowl better? If old football legends picked teams, that would make me watch. It seems like you're just playing to the same audience that likes watching you anyway. And I can't, like you said, I can't remember the last time I watched a Pro Bowl. I got to be honest with you. I don't even think I have it on just as a thing that's kind of on and I'm not really paying attention to it, but it's on. I don't even do that.
Normally, if anything, it's I'll just like flash over to it, you know, like on a commercial and kind of just see what I see. Like I remember the year. Who was it? Was it Chad Johnson had like four touchdowns? No, it was Brandon Marshall. He had like four touchdowns in the game. And I saw one of them, like just happened to turn it on, see it, and then I turned it off and didn't hear he had four touchdowns until like 2 days later.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, like that's something that stands out from within the last few years. Like that's what I remember.
See, that's something like, okay, so what makes baseball work? Because baseball, I watch that. I've always watched the All-Star game. Is it because it's the only thing on? There's no other distraction?
Could be, definitely.
I don't know. I mean, I remember as a kid, I would keep score. I'd take my baseball cards out. I mean, I was, you know, I loved it. But I also think it was a little different for me as a kid because, you know, we got the Red Sox, but we didn't get, outside of game of the week, we didn't have cable when I was a kid. So we didn't get National League teams. So if you collected baseball cards, you know, when I was a kid, early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, you would get a baseball card of Pete Rose or Johnny Bench, and really the only time you could see them was the All-Star game. The only reason you could see them play was in the All-Star game. I mean, I didn't even see highlights. I mean, I didn't have ESPN or anything like that. I didn't see highlights of these guys. So that's why I like the All-Star game. I think the Pro Bowl is just because it, when it was for so many years, was the last game of the season, it was always kind of that afterthought. It was like it was the biggest letdown. I think moving it to the before the Super Bowl is problematic because it does a couple of things. One, so many people don't want to go. This now is becoming like a rite of passage.
Did you hear how many players are Pro Bowlers this year?
I heard 40-something Pro Bowl, or is it 30 that have decided to skip?
Yeah, it's 30. The total number of Pro Bowlers this year is 133.
Because of how many people are leaving?
How many people? Right. Well, you got all the Panthers and Broncos out now, so they've had to be replaced, and then guys just being like, I'm just tired and I don't want to play.
Dude, Malcolm Butler said no to the Pro Bowl. Yep. I mean, like, why? It's a free trip to Hawaii, and I think you get a little scratch for it, right? You get a little money?
Yeah, you get a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's not like you make a ton of money.
The thing is, these guys, they have incentives in their contract if they make the Pro Bowl, but it doesn't. Their contracts don't say they have to play in the Pro Bowl.
Right.
If they make the Pro Bowl, they get their deal.
I got to be honest with you, man. Even though it's in Hawaii, these guys can afford to go to Hawaii on their own and not even know they paid for it, right? Like, so it's not like, oh, I get a free trip to Hawaii. They could be like, dude, I can go to Hawaii and not even feel it in my pocketbook.
Now, did you see what the NHL is doing?
Okay, so
the controversy there.
Okay, the NHL, the only controversy I knew was the Scott situation, the John Scott situation.
No, there's a new controversy.
Okay, what's the new controversy in the NHL?
Jonathan Toews was taken out of his last game in the third. He did not play the third period because he had an illness and a lower body injury is what the Blackhawks said.
Okay.
Well, he backed out of the All-Star game saying that, you know, he went to the doctors. They're still saying he's got symptoms and his lower body injury is still hurting. So he pulled out, wants to get ready for the second half of the season. Alex Ovechkin of the Capitals got hurt shoveling snow during the blizzard. Hurt himself. Pulled out of the All-Star game. They are both now going to be suspended for their first game back after the All-Star break.
Oh my gosh. Why? How?
Because they're not participating.
Why would you allow that as a union? Why would you allow that kind of power to Gary Bettman? Allowing to suspend players who don't participate in an exhibition like that.
And
that's crazy.
These are, in my mind, the two biggest stars in your league. You got Jonathan Toews of the most popular team in America, the Chicago Blackhawks, who is everywhere. He does everything for the NHL. He's all over Chicago. He's like J.J. Watt, seriously, in Chicago. He's on every commercial. You see him and Patrick Kane everywhere. And Alex Ovechkin's, I mean, maybe the second superstar in this league, and who does all kinds of stuff for the NHL, does stuff in Russia for the NHL. These are two of your biggest moneymakers, and you're going to suspend them because they're both hurt, and one just happened to get hurt shoveling snow.
So basically, this is what Gary Bettman in this policy is saying, that the All-Star game is it not a standalone product?
Right.
Right, like the Pro Bowl is a standalone product. It stinks, but Tom Brady doesn't have to be there. It's a standalone product, right?
Right.
The NBA, listen, I'll have to say this. The NBA, I don't think you have to worry about a lot of NBA guys not wanting to go to the All-Star game. I think they all want to go to the All-Star game because it's one big fun fest for these guys when they're in town. It's a party nobody wants to not go.
Right.
Right? I mean, it's just, you know, like they just get to these towns and they take over the town. When they were in Denver in 2005, it was like a mad zoo of fun throughout the whole city.
Well, just imagine that weekend in Vegas they had.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I know. It was like Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, it had a biblical proportion, right? I was expecting to rain down fiery hail with those guys down there. Like the good Lord was like, enough. Oh, my God. I can't even see what's going on. But in the NHL, this apparently Bettman is saying, listen, this is not a standalone product. You need to be there and you need to be there and you need to be there because this is our showcase, celebrate all everything that's us. And we're just not going to have people not go. But it amazes me that he has that kind of authority in the contract in the players in the agreement with the players that the players say, yeah, you can suspend us for not going to an exhibition.
And now you're hurting the team. You're not just hurting the player. You're hurting the entire organization.
Absolutely.
I mean, yes, it's only one game, but that one game can make a huge difference come, you know.
That's
May.
Craziness. Craziness. I mean, what is he worried about? Like an influx of people going, eh, I'm not going.
Right.
No way. I am not going. Unbelievable. All right, coming up next, Adam is seen making a murderer. We're going to dive off the sports for a second on this very popular Netflix show. I have to hear what he thinks about this. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, if you're like me, you binge watch a lot of stuff on Netflix. Over the Christmas holiday, I binged watched Making a Murderer. I don't know how I even got onto that. It just seemed like something everyone was watching and everybody was commenting on, so I said, I'll watch it. I couldn't stop watching this unbelievable documentary. I don't even know if I believe it or whatnot. I just was very entertained by it. It was nonstop. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Just real quick, those of you who don't know about it, it's a story of a guy named Stephen Avery who went to jail for a crime he didn't commit for 18 years. He got out. He was suing the police department that had, you know, prosecuted or basically charged him with this crime because there was some negligence and new evidence and all that stuff. And while the lawsuit was going on, there was a woman by the name of Teresa Halbach. She was murdered. He was arrested for this. There was evidence that he had done it, but they believe it was planted. It's the Cliff Notes version of this. You really should watch it. So I tell Adam this, and I said, hey, you're looking for something to binge watch? You should watch Making a Murderer. And Adam goes, all right. So he started watching it, and then he was sick for 4 days, and so I know you've completed this. So let me know what you think.
I completed it today, and I came away. You know, I sat and I thought about it, and I thought about it as I was watching it. And what I came away, my two thoughts coming away is, I completely believe that Stephen Avery is guilty. I think he killed Teresa Halbach.
Nice. Okay.
Now,
very, very few people came away from that believing that, because there was all these petitions online like, let's get President Obama to free Stephen Avery right now.
Now, the one I'm completely confused on is Brendan Dassey. I honestly
too.
Don't think the kid did anything, but the kid is so just, he's just not all there, as you can tell if you watch the documentary, that I just don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't come up with a yes or no. He's guilty, in my opinion, or he's not guilty.
The one troubling thing for me was, because they show the interrogation and it looked like they were kind of coercing him.
Yes.
And he was there without his mom and all that stuff. But there was they had the recorded phone call where the mother says to him, so you did some of those things? And he goes, yeah, some of it. Well, why would you say that to your mother? Like, I couldn't separate that.
Like, I've heard so many people talk about, oh, Stephen Avery was screwed in his trial. No, Brendan Dassey was a kid that was screwed in his trial.
He absolutely was.
I know that for a fact.
That's true.
Completely screwed. He never had a chance.
I'm not sure I think that I want Stephen Avery. Like, here's the problem. This is a comment on people in general who watched this and went crazy over it, because this was one of the more how do I say this? This reactionary things I've seen from people where they immediately wanted Stephen Avery freed. They wanted to petition Obama, who can't free a state prisoner, by the way. And also they wanted to petition the government of Wisconsin to free him. They wanted him freed. Like, I at least said, all right, new trial maybe, but freedom? Wait a minute. Now let's stop and go. If you watch that and you came away with thinking that Stephen Avery should walk, rethink that.
Yes.
Because this was a documentary that was clearly one-sided on his side. All right, I don't care how people say, well, they did the best they possibly could. Baloney. I watched that whole thing. I'm like, this is clearly something that is geared towards getting you to feel something for Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey. You need to look at the whole thing. Now, you may come up with the same conclusion when you see the whole thing, and that's fine. But the idea of you watching a documentary and then running to a petition to get a guy freed of this is insane.
Absolutely
insane.
The two lawyers that did Stephen Avery's case, you know, the two guys that were predominantly in the documentary, I can't remember their names.
Dean Strang
and the other guy.
The other guy.
Basically, they kept talking throughout the trial like he was framed. It was the cops. They dropped the key. They planted the blood. They did this. They did that. But then they kept talking about, well, the police, you know, there's a murderer out there. To me, you can't have it both ways. There can't be a murderer out there that killed Teresa Halbach. Or you're saying this person killed Teresa Halbach. The cops know it. They don't care that there's a murderer out there. And they just wanted to plant everything on this guy, which, in my opinion, there's no way possible they could have done all of what they did without somebody saying something.
Well, the other thing, too, and this is something I pointed out to my friend who's really into this. And he's like, I read all the court. He just dove into this head first. I read all the court documents. Listen, this murder happened in 2005.
Right.
This didn't happen yesterday.
Yes.
Okay. He just wasn't found guilty. He was found guilty about 10 years ago. All right. Look, when you get a conspiracy, the problem with conspiracies are this. I'm not saying they don't happen, but it's the one thing that we talk about in sports conspiracies. If you involve too many people, somebody talks.
Right.
They talk out of guilt. They talk because they can't keep their mouth shut, or they talk because in the end they got away with something and can't believe they got away with it. If you involve multiple people, the conspiracy falls apart. And this was the problem with this was too many branches started to get extended. And over 10 years, we were led to believe nobody felt bad about framing an innocent man for a murder and letting a murderer basically right. go walk free. Nobody felt bad about this, that a lawsuit, which would have been covered by insurance for the most part, was so important to the average cops in this town that they were totally willing to do this all because they wanted to avoid their department paying this lawsuit, and they had no problems doing this. And 10 years later, they still don't have a problem with this. That is something I have a hard time believing. I'm not saying this kind of stuff doesn't happen, and I'm not saying, and I do know that, look, when police investigating a crime, some have fudged evidence because they know they got the right guy and they just need a little to get the case going. That happens a lot. But basically going, he's innocent, but let's screw him over. Whew, you need a lot of people to help you with that. And if you don't prove that in court, you really can't use that. Because here's the thing, and I'm not a lawyer, but I've always been led to believe it is beyond a reasonable doubt, not beyond any doubt.
Right.
So here's the, because my friend pointed this out. They said, well, they didn't have 100% proof he did it. You don't need that. You need beyond a reasonable doubt. Because why you have that in there, it prevents this. Well, you know, there are other people who could have murdered this woman. An alien could have come down from space. You can't disprove that an alien didn't come down from outer space to kill her. Bigfoot could have come out of the woods and kill her. You can't disprove that. You don't know for sure that Bigfoot didn't come out of the woods to kill that woman. So you really have to take those things into consideration, that there are other explanations for her death than my client. You can't do that. Because it's not reasonable to assume an alien came down. So if you don't have evidence to support police conspiracy, you cannot just go, what the hell? Let's see if it sticks. Police conspiracy. They never proved it. They just speculated. How did that key get there? Well, it could have fallen from the bookshelf where it was hidden, or police could have planted it there. Let's go with that. And that's a hard time. I'm kind of glad you came out with the guilty thing, because a lot of people really overreacted. But it doesn't mean they're wrong. It just means I was like really shocked at the thing.
I mean, I will say a lot of weird things did happen throughout the trial, but you could probably go to any murder trial and find little weird things that happened.
Sure, of course. Of course. Well done, Adam.
Guilty.
Your analysis of making a murderer guilty. All right, Tony D. Phil Mickelson story next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. I love Phil Mickelson. He's my favorite golfer. He's been my favorite golfer for a while. I love the Phil Mickelson stories. Betting on the Baltimore Ravens to win the Super Bowl. There's one particular story that I really like about Phil, and it involved made public last year during the British Open. Phil and his wife Amy went to Muirfield to revisit the site of his British Open championship in 2013. So it was the 2014 British Open that him, Amy, Bones, and like people in his group, they went to Muirfield, and it was a rainy night. And they were walking along the grounds, and it was kind of cold, but they were just kind of standing around the 18th hole and reliving the memory. And Amy's hat blew into a bunker, and Phil went into the bunker to get the hat, and he got the hat, and he gave it to his wife, and then he went to find a rake, and it was raining, and he raked the bunker meticulously, just made it perfect. And a couple of guys at Muirfield were having dinner in the restaurant, and they noticed that Phil Mickelson was out there raking this bunker, and they sent a letter to him, and they said, "We saw what you did. You are a true champion, a true gentleman, and you have won many fans here at the club." And it was just this great moment of how much he respected the game. A lot of Phil stories. This next Phil Mickelson story is the best Phil Mickelson story I've ever heard. Phil Mickelson was playing a match, or a early morning game, if you will, with a 17-year-old named Ryan Ruffles from Australia. Apparently it was at 7 in the morning at Torrey Pines. Phil allegedly said to the kid, "I don't wake up this early to play for anything less than 2,500. Now remember, this kid's 17. He gave the kid 2-1 odds if Ruffles beat Mickelson in this match, just a friendly game. He ended up birdieing, the kid ended up birding 6 of the last 7 holes and won $5,000 from Phil Mickelson. Now, why is this story good? Because the only reason we know this story is because this kid told this story to the Sydney Morning Herald. Now, Phil has got a real problem with this. He said, quote unquote, "He's young and he's got some things to learn. One of them is you don't discuss certain things. You don't discuss specifics of what you play for. And you certainly don't embellish and create a false amount just for your own benefit. So those things right there are, that's high school stuff. And he's going to have to stop doing that now if he's out on the PGA Tour." Well done, Phil. This is great. First of all, let me ask you a question, Adam. Do you think Phil that the amount of money that he won from Phil Mickelson has been embellished?
I don't know, because Phil loves to play for some money.
I think the kid is absolutely telling the truth.
Phil loves to gamble. So
I think Phil Mickelson gave him $5,000. I think he's absolutely telling the truth.
Yeah.
Completely. And I think Phil doesn't want anybody to know that, but he beat this kid down.
Because, I mean, think about it. $5,000 is not that much to Phil.
To Phil, he's just like, "Here, that's no problem."
Now to a 17-year-old kid who just beat a professional golfer by doing what he did, you know, the last 5 holes or whatever it was. $5,000, you know, that sounds like it's a good chunk of money for a kid.
I want to know if Phil Mickelson would have taken the $2,500 off the kid if he didn't win. You think Phil would take his $2,500? Because I absolutely think he would have.
Yeah, I want to say yeah.
I think he would have. He said,
"True,
I want that."
Gamblers will take the money.
I want that in small, untraceable bills, man.
Right.
And you know, give me my money. Give me my money, man. Why are you ducking me? Give me my money. Golly, Phil is the best. He is absolutely the best. I like the way. I mean, look, if you're this kid, this is getting taken to the woodshed. I mean, this is a public reprimand from one of the top golfers in the world. And he has basically schooled you down about the etiquettes of gambling. Phil Mickelson is a notorious gambler. notorious. He got in trouble on the PGA Tour because Jim Furyk, I think they were at Firestone, and Jim Furyk was in a bunker on the 18th, and Mickelson gave odds on whether or not he would hole out, and Furyk held out, and Mickelson got paid, and Tim Finchman, you know, he had to have a talk with them about gambling in the locker room. Phil is great at this kind of stuff. Good for Phil. Boy, this kid, though, beating 17 years old, beat Phil Mickelson in a money game. Good for him. That's got some game. I have to say, the line that I love about this story is, I don't get up this early to play for anything less than $2,500. That's great. I don't wake up this early unless I'm playing for some serious money. Just a Mickelson makes $60 million a year in endorsements and all that other stuff. $5,000 to him is like a buck, if that. Good for him. I feel a little bad for the kid, though. He did have to learn the hard way. That's a tough lesson that you got to take. Can't beat these guys. What if Jordan Spieth said that? Do you think he would say something about that with Jordan Spieth? Because Jordan Spieth is kind of ruling golf right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would.
I think he would admonish Jordan Spieth, too. I think Phil takes this code really, really seriously. I think he would have said, if Spieth was running his mouth, like, yeah, I was playing Phil for 10 grand and I took him. I think Spieth would have been, Mickelson would have said something. I was taking, while you were gone, I had to make the comment about Spieth and this burnout travel stuff. Slow down, cowboy. You're not burning out. You're 21 years old. Cool it. 22 years old. You don't need to be burning out on anything. Stop touring the world on these money grabs. Chill out and focus on the Masters. He is traveling the world, and he says he's tired. He's in Singapore right now after just playing in Dubai. What are you doing, man? Slow down. Because the last thing I need is for Jordan Spieth to be all, you know, brain pudding by the time the season starts. Good Lord. 800-777-2907. We're talking about the Baltimore Ravens, how Phil Mickelson, I think Phil Mickelson bet $20,000 on the Ravens in Vegas back, and he's a young man too. I don't even think he turned 30 yet. He bet 20 grand on the Ravens to win the Super Bowl, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl. By the way, that Super Bowl is the next Super Bowl flashback that we're doing coming up in the next segment. Super Bowl 35, where the Ravens beat the New York Giants. That's also the Super Bowl in which Mickelson scored big. Big money for Phil. God, Lee, that's great. That's a great Phil Mickelson story. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. When does golf really start kicking in? When do we really start paying attention to it? When it gets to Phoenix? Pebble Beach?
I'd say that.
Because it's kind of going on right now, but I'm not even really paying attention to it.
No, I saw a little bit over the weekend, last weekend, but I didn't really get into it or anything.
Do you see Greg Norman is off the Fox Golf team?
Yes.
Got to talk.
Right, yeah, you got to do something.
You know, you can't just go, hey, Joe, that's a tough putt right there, Joe. How about you tell us what's going on?
Right. Give us some insight.
That was such a bad broadcast. Awful. Wasn't that awful. Terrible? Terrible. The big memory I have of that was not Greg Norman screwing up. It was Holly Saunders. Remember she had Jordan Spieth? He just won the U.S. Open. And the only thing she could muster up was, hey, did Under Armour could have got you some clothes for a playoff if there was one?
Right.
Remember that? And Jordan was like, what?
What are you talking about?
I really do think they'd come up with something. I'm not going out there in my underwear, Holly. I'm not wearing the same clothes. I'm sure Under Armour would give me some clothing to wear if there was a playoff. And by the way, in case you didn't know that I just won the U.S. Open, can you, I don't know, ask me how I feel about it? God, Fox. I want to miss Greg Norman, though. This time we got Paul Azinger.
Yes.
All right, coming up, number 3 in our Super Bowl flashbacks on this day in history, the Baltimore Ravens are champs in the more interesting Super Bowl. A lot of different angles in Super Bowl 35. We'll break that down next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
I've had a good time this hour. We talked about the All-Star Games, talked a little Making a Murderer, talked a little Phil Mickelson, my favorite golfer. Steven on Twitter, I refuse to watch the Pro Bowl, especially now. It's the same reason I want to eliminate the NASCAR All-Star Race. Too gimmicky. Yeah, too gimmicky. I don't mind tweaking stuff, but I don't know who's calling for you to do that if you're a sports entity. I don't know who's asking you to do these kind of things. Drafting players, picking teams, celebrity coaches. Like in Nashville, there's going to be like country singers that are going to be like celebrity coach. Who, like, this isn't appealing. Can't you just play a game and just get it over with? That's why I like the NBA All-Star Game. It's one big fun fest. No defense, 175 to 168 kind of thing. Everybody's having a ball. Everyone's looking to get out of there and have a good time. Good. That's fine. Nobody wants to go to the Pro Bowl. Nobody wants to go to Hawaii. So everyone's saying, and then by the way, why would you, how does NFL have a Pro Bowl? Like they say, well, we're going to make it relevant. We're going to put it the right before the Super Bowl. No, it makes it irrelevant when half of your big Pro Bowlers, are from the two Super Bowl teams and aren't going to show up. Cam Newton is going to be your MVP. He's not in the Pro Bowl because he's got a bigger thing to do. So anyway, we've been doing this thing about Super Bowls this date in history, talking about Super Bowls that, you know, are celebrating an anniversary. January 28th is the day we were looking at. Three Super Bowls were held on that day. Super Bowl 24, San Francisco over Denver. Super Bowl 30, Dallas over Pittsburgh. And now Super Bowl 35, which was played in Tampa between the Baltimore Ravens and the New York Giants. This is the infamous Super Bowl. And it's infamous because whenever you have a team that's playing well and doesn't have a solid quarterback or an elite quarterback, this is the Super Bowl people point to. This is the Super Bowl people point to and say, aha, Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. This is the Super Bowl that he won it in. This is also, in all seriousness, another Super Bowl that was a one-year journey for Ray Lewis. Do you remember his story? The Super Bowl before in Atlanta? Limo, two dead people, didn't know who did it, was in jail for a while, got back into the league, and finished that process of being the MVP of this one for the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens had an interesting year that year. They went 12-4 and they were a wild card team. They had real troubles on offense. There was a point where they weren't scoring offensive touchdowns. The offense was really, really bad. They were 13th in the league in scoring. They were 16th in yards. They were 23rd in passing. They had tremendous amount of scoring. They went through five games without scoring an offensive touchdown, even though they managed to win two of those games. Trent Dilfer was the quarterback, game manager, not an elite quarterback by any means. The defense ruled the roost, much like what we're seeing with the Denver Broncos. And they were playing a New York Giants team that was led by Kerry Collins. And Collins and the Giants got to the Super Bowl with their offense on fire in a rout of the Minnesota Vikings in the postseason. Would that offense be able to do anything against the Baltimore Ravens on this day in 2001? And that answer was absolutely not. The Ravens held the Giants to only 132 yards of offense. They got five turnovers. The Giants only scored a touchdown. The final score was 34-7, and the Giants' only touchdown, venture to guess, kick return. Kick return. Ron Dixon had a 97-yard kickoff return. You know what the Ravens did as soon as the Giants kicked back off to them? Jermaine Lewis scored on an 84-yard kick return for a touchdown. Back-to-back kick returns for touchdowns. And the Ravens dominated. You could look at this game in a number of ways. As I said earlier, this becomes an infamous game from the standpoint of this is the game people point to about Trent Dilfer. Hey, if he won a Super Bowl, our quarterback can certainly win a Super Bowl. Dilfer threw for 153 yards and a touchdown. His one touchdown pass was to Brandon Stokely, a 38-yard touchdown in the first quarter. It also was the game, as I said earlier, was this year arc for Ray Lewis, who was involved in this, not involved, I don't want to say involved because he was acquitted and all that, or he was in charge and all that. But he had been in jail, and he said he didn't know what was going to happen to him and all that stuff, and then he ended up being a Super Bowl MVP. But this was also a Super Bowl championship to a group of players that were known as the Baltimore Ravens, but to a lot of people, they were known as the Cleveland Browns. This was the team that was in Cleveland that did move. And even though it took a couple of years, it wasn't like it took forever, and they ended up being Super Bowl champs. This was the Ozzie Newsome team. This was the Art Modell team. Jim Fassel was the head coach for the New York Giants. And it was if you like defensive football, it was a good defensive game from the Baltimore Ravens. It just ended up being not only a blowout, it was just a completely dominated game by Baltimore. And it was the Giants' first loss in the Super Bowl. They would go on to win two more with Eli Manning. People like to remember the New York Giants of Bill Parcells and the New York Giants of Eli Manning. The Giants do have this really dark Super Bowl blemish of the time where the Baltimore Ravens ran over them, prevented their offense from scoring a touchdown, forced five turnovers, sacked Kerry Collins four times. In fact, gave Kerry Collins the worst Super Bowl quarterback rating in the history of the game, and I think it still stands to this day. If you're talking ranking quarterbacks, Kerry Collins is the worst in Super Bowl history. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.